Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook. We're live on YouTube. We're live on Twitch. We're live on Instagram. We're live inside your house.
Yes, what? We're in someone's house.
We are. We're surprise. Technically we're in three houses, I guess. So there is that. But it's the beginning of the month.
Podcast is coming from inside the house.
It's sort of the beginning of the month. It's actually almost the middle of the month, let's be honest. But at the beginning of the month, we pay tribute to some of our great Patreon supporters. Yeah. Folks who support us at the $5 and up level by giving a little shout out. A thank you here at the top of the show. So let's kick it off with Oitis Larson.
It's like our version of a spelling.
Aaron C. Sorry. Hollis.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Adam Amanda Harris.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tillman.
Beercat PhD.
Carrie Matthews.
Christina Jaramillo.
Christina Rensfield.
Christera Lizzie.
Clemens Luer.
Corey Smoker.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Fuentes.
Daniel Pete the Poodle Cabral.
Yep.
Danny Hack.
David Donaldson.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Doug Sadaway.
Dylan L.J.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quish.
Energon's Muse.
Ooh, Enrique Chumbas.
Gerard Davilia.
Ian Rayley.
Ian Thomas.
Isaac Carter.
Jake Fry.
James Connolly.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
John Henderson.
Jonathan John.
Jonathan McCool.
Josh Wright.
Joshua W. Brogson.
Kelby.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Darren Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Lance Kamigsi.
Liwana Thomas.
Lucas Sink.
Maddie.
Matt Tice.
Matthew C. Hernandez.
Matthew DePalma.
Matthew Schofield.
Michael McAuliffe.
Michael Tillman.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick Grayson.
Official CBC chef Brett Macris.
Stray Bullies. Omnia Solart.
Orin Dix.
Pedro A. Wrangle.
Provocative Ambulance.
Oh, Pete, the way you say that. Rev Mikey.
Robert Pettinato.
Ron Hood.
Shouts to the Queen, Roxanne Tyler, my mom at home. It worked out.
Sarah Schottmuller.
Scott Carpenter.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott England.
Severin.
Oops. Good try. Severin, I believe, and Stanley.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Bench.
Trill Root.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
Will Diaz.
W.M. Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
And Zika's Viral Comics. And I was going to say about halfway through that that might have been our best reading ever.
I was
going to
say perfect. And wow. I still think it was perfect. Let's count that as the
okay, that was perfect. Even its imperfections were perfect, just like you if you support our Patreon, patreon.com/comicbookclub. $2 and up, you can get access to our back catalog of podcasts going all the way back to 2011. A lot of those aren't online. The 80s. Yeah, the best of the 80s, the 90s, and today.
Hey! Yeah, we play all the hits.
Pete, we have a bunch of podcasts where Pete was wearing enormous suits. Like, just the biggest suits you've ever seen.
Dude. Pete was one of the squirrel nut zippers. Not a lot of people know that.
I liked big shoulder pads.
And you cannot lie. Yeah. Rough first draft, I got to be honest. One other thing I want to mention, just because otherwise I'm going to forget it later in the show, and then we will bring in our great guests here. So we did give a shout out to Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullies, a.k.a. Official CBC Chef. And he recently posted a GoFundMe on the internet, is what I was going to say.
Yeah, a little place called the internet, which
you gotta
if you haven't tried
it out. Check it out at internet.com. Anyway, he posted a GoFundMe. He and his family have hit some rough times, but they're not sitting back and just taking it. They are coming up with an amazing project to make a bunch of money and get back on their feet, which is they created a new restaurant pop-up called Shift. The restaurant is going to be over the, I'm definitely going to bangle this, so somebody else want to say a Beau Carré? Is that?
Brew Carré.
Brew Carré, there we go. Brewery.
It's a brewery.
Yeah, which is great. I believe Brett sent us some stuff from there one time, and it was incredible. So they are doing a restaurant above the brewery called Shift, and they have a GoFundMe for it right now. Thankfully, they were successful in terms of the donations, but I am sure, knowing them, they could use any help they could get, and the money is not going to go to waste. And one of the nice things that they said is they're kind of looking at it as like investors in this startup restaurant. So you go down there, you're like, hey man, I gave to the GoFundMe. They'll be like, here you go, here's a french fry. And you're like, no, I gave more. And they'll be like, here's two french fries, something like that.
Sweet.
It's a french fry currency system. That's how New Orleans runs.
So I dropped that in the chats over here, but if you're listening to the podcast later, go to GoFundMe. It's support Brett and Becky in launching Shift NOLA. It sounds awesome. Yeah, I want to go there. I want to eat there. I want to drink there. I can't wait to see how successful it is.
The eating and drinking can happen almost simultaneously. Part of the project, which I am.
Sounds delicious.
I've gotten close to doing both of those at the same time, but never quite achieved it.
Yes.
Looking forward to it.
And I will just mention, for anybody who has been listening to the podcast, this is probably abundantly apparent, but Brett designs or curates cocktails for us every week. Some of these amazing comic book-based cocktails. And so, go support him. He has done an amazing job of supporting and helping out of the show over the years. Love to support him as well. There you go. We have some amazing guests for you this evening, so why don't we bring them in now? First up is the team behind Luminous Beings, new graphic novel from Viking Books for young readers that is very cool. Ladies and gentlemen, David Arnold and Joe Pimentia.
Welcome!
Pimentia. Welcome. Pimenta? Oh, Joe, you were on mute.
You're on mute, Joe.
So you can't yell at me right now.
You have to get the name right, and that will get Joe off mute.
Close enough. You were close enough. It's
Pimenta. Don't let me off. That was terrible. I practiced it all day before the show for no particular reason, and then I completely
missed it. I've been working with Joe Pimenta for 4 years, and tonight found out that they prefer Joe. So I've been calling them Jose for four straight years.
Wow.
So I'm gonna do my best to switch it to Joe.
And really, who did a worse job here, me or David? I mean, it's up to the audience.
Don't throw Dave under the bus. He was nice enough to share with you. David, fun fact,
don't ever
give Alex any information. He'll immediately use it against you. He's a horrible human being.
I'll remember that.
It's true. That out of the way, what isn't horrible is the book Luminous Beings.
Yes, it's awesome.
It's fantastic. It is a wild YA graphic novel set during a squirrel zombie apocalypse. I love this book. I love vibes of this book. David, I do want to ask you first. It seems abundantly apparent to me that this is, among other things, a not-so-veiled metaphor for COVID. Was that what you were going for here?
No, is the short answer. I mean, I did write it. I mean, it's so obvious now, like looking back, I wrote it as a screenplay during the first 4 or 5 months of lockdown. Mm-hmm. I was working on a very, serious prose novel that made no sense. Like, so many other artists during those times were trying to figure it out. And I was like, the only thing that I'm going to be able to spend my time on is something really silly. And so I decided to give myself a challenge, which was to take my silliest idea and treat it with the utmost sincerity.
Oh, I love
and
that.
Yeah, my silliest idea was zombie squirrels. And I was like, all right, what can I do with zombie squirrels? And really the turning point was when I realized the story itself wasn't really about zombie squirrels. I like to say zombie squirrels. It's not really about zombie squirrels. Zombie squirrels are really the setting. Would you say that's right?
Yeah. It's great.
Joe, do you feel like that's the... Well, why don't you talk about when you came aboard the project, Joe?
Well, I was born in 1980. No, I'm kidding.
from birth.
I mean, David can tell a better story about how I came on board on this, but clearly, but like by the time that David and I met, I like to tell everyone the fact that like as soon as David and I talked for the first time on Skype, it was like, match made in heaven. Like, we clicked immediately. It was like, it was fantastic working dynamic. And yeah, I mean, like, just, you know, and again, we like that kind of prompted us into like just talking about like how, what the book was about and what the vibes were, what the focus of the book is, you know, who the characters were and everything. And yeah, I mean, like, agreeing with David, I mean, like, I don't know if he sells it this way, but like the way that I like to tell a lot of people is, it's book smart, but in the middle of a zombie apocalypse. And, you know, and you know, because again, like at the core is really the story of, like, even though there's four main characters, it really is a story predominantly of these two friends, you know, in a very pivotal moment of their life where big decisions are about to get made. And it really is about their relationship and their dynamic. It also just happens to be in, you know, in the full swing of this horrific, you know, zombie apocalypse that has that seems to be happening. So, yeah, I mean,
I love the tone, the sort of chill-pocalypse vibe, where it's like, you know, things are bad, but also let's talk about stuff we like.
Right.
But I got to ask about the squirrels. I live in Brooklyn, and I watch the squirrels. They're around my house constantly. They seem like they're ready to kill me now, and they haven't been zombified yet. Is that, were you just looking out your window? It was the first inspiration for this, or where, how'd you land on squirrels?
Yeah, David, how'd you land on squirrels?
Yeah, I mean, literally, I mean, I'm relatively new to the comics world, so the idea of the visualization of it didn't come until much, much further along. But as a, you know, this is my sixth novel, my first graphic novel. I tend to just, whenever I have an idea, I just kind of dump it in a file and I leave it there, and it just lives on my desktop until I come back and kind of peruse through a few ideas. And this one was, I was reading in a park and the squirrel was like totally fearless, like getting way closer than it had any right to be. Clearly it had been fed, you know, and it was, it just not afraid of me at all. And yeah, it was just like, well, what if there were like a dozen of these guys and they were ferocious, you know? And so that was the idea, you know, years ago, that just happened to be there when I needed something silly.
Great.
Yeah, I just want to jump in talking about the squirrels thing. First off, I love the vibes of this book, the colors, the choices of artistically being made, the panel designs, absolutely magnificent. It puts off such a cool vibe, even though it's got the fun kind of like tense zombie apocalypse. But then they clearly, they're talking and then they kind of like move the squirrel away, you know, so it's this fun kind of like, we're in on the joke immediately, and it's just such a cool vibe. But yeah, I mean, during the pandemic, I lived in Philly, and there'd be like squirrels out in the backyard, just like bench pressing acorns, just eyeballing me, just like looking at me like, oh, your time's coming.
Yeah. So like, we can take that guy.
So like just this premise, I don't know what it was, but really just spoke to me. And they, you did such a great job on setup and then delivery on the execution of this book. It is not only touching, but it's also so fun and has a lightness to it.
Well, thank you. I mean, we have to give a shout out to CAP Ward, was the colorist. You know, we had a lot of talks early on about some kind of inspirations, and we wanted the colors to be, to kind of match the surrealism of their life, of the kid's life. And so, yeah, we had some meetings with CAP Ward kind of early on, and they just immediately got it. I mean, Joe can probably speak more to this than I can, because they were in contact more to, you know, as the artists. Mm-hmm. But early on, yeah, I mean, the Paper Girls, kind of like the surreal, just kind of in your face colors were something that we were definitely going for.
Joe, what was your approach to, not to get back to the squirrels, but approach visually to the squirrels? Because if they don't work, which they do, I think the entire book really kind of falls apart. So what did you play around with there?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I definitely felt that, like, that it was just like so serendipitous, because I don't, David and I did not know each other before working on this project, and I love squirrels so much. I love squirrels. So when this kind of came around, I was like, this is great. But no, you're absolutely right. I mean, just like, cause I mean, even though, you know, like David said, like the squirrels are such an environment aspect of it. Like, they're such a setting of the whole book. And, you know, like, we can talk about the story later if David wants to, but yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right of just like, you know, like, I did have to like make sure that however I was going to portray the squirrels, it was going to really dictate if the tone was correct. Because again, as much as I love squirrels, squirrels to me are very cute. And these squirrels had to be not cute, you know, like they really did have to like, you know, but also like, I also didn't want to go with like a gross sound and, you know, and I also like, I'm aware of my limitations. I'm aware of my abilities. So I really did have to like, just work on what the designs were going to be of just like, you know, if they're going to be like these creatures that exist in this world, like how much time am I going to be spending on making sure that it gets across that they're squirrels? It comes across that they are, you know, vicious and voracious, but also that they are still identifiable as squirrels. So that definitely kind of, send me down a very fun day or a couple of days of just like sketching different designs and kind of figuring out just like how much to zombify. Because I mean, that's also something that I'm sure that anyone who with more expertise on drawing zombies can tell you, of just like, you can go full gross out.
Right, you got to find your line, your zombie line.
You got to find your line because, I mean, like, you know, because as David said, I mean, like, you do have to, you know, we did want it to keep some level of, not lightness, but just, like, the tenderness of it. Like, it still had to be cute. There still had to be appeal to them, even though there is a degree of danger to them, so.
Well, and let me, last question about the squirrels, guaranteed. No one's ever going to bring it up.
You can talk about it all day.
But, Joe, I will say, like, you do add, like, the first page is sort of a scary squirrel, and then we sort of return to that. Because when I first hit that, I was like, whoa, what it? And I was like, oh, and the tone sort of shifts. Can you talk about sort of using those larger splash pages where the squirrels are, you know, terrifying?
I mean, I would love to, but we got to give you that's a David question because, like, that's like he wrote that specifically. So, David, take it away.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's funny because I'm bad at timelines. And, you know, between the time that I started writing this and now that it's out, it's so much has happened and so many other projects. But I do remember feeling like, okay, we need to show it. It's kind of just like some pretty like something that I've learned kind of in storytelling, especially if you're going to present like terror on the page, even if it's subtle or even if it doesn't come into play until the back half of the book, you have to show it up front so you know what we're dealing with. And it's like, let's just right off the bat have a really terrifying looking glowy-eyed squirrel. And you know, the book is Luminous Beings, the title, you know, it's a double meaning obviously, but it is, those words are straight out of Star Wars. So I was like, let's just give it to Yoda right at the very beginning on the first page and kind of show people what we're dealing with. And huge credit to Joe, though. We talked early on, you know, as the writer, I'm not an artist at all. But like I was, when I was describing the panels, it was like, I would say things like, okay, so squirrels are flying all over in the background, but then this is the thing that's happening. And Joe's like, you realize I have to draw each and every one of these squirrels. Even when squirrels aren't like being mentioned, they're there. And so that made their job, you know, all the harder. But I think it's kind of brilliant the way that, you know, you do see them. They're flying around kind of all over the place. But you don't see how ferocious they are until you get really close. And there are a couple of those splash pages that Joe did so well that you see like how mangy their fur is and the eyes are kind of glowing and the teeth are kind of all over the place. And
And also super just, effective. Like, just to jump into and to piggyback on what David is saying, it's just like also like, and again, more credit where credit is due on David on this, on his writing ability or his specifically script writing ability, not just writing, but like specifically script. Because like, the first time that he sent me the script, it was very much formatted, not like a comic book script. So, you know, like David had some ideas, but he didn't, you know, he had not written a comic before. And, you know, so I kind of just like, you know, we had a good conversation about that. But anyways, to my point of just like that first page of like that big splash page of stuff, like I did send him just like some thumbnails and stuff. And we did kind of converse this into like what that first page should look like, which is, you know, it's the mystery page, right? I mean, it's just like you really barely even see like the silhouette. I mean, you really don't see any of the details and stuff. And David was very specific about that, you know, because I think I sent him a sketch of just like the front page and the, you know, I'm sorry, of like the opening splash page, and there would be more details and stuff. And David was very more just like, no, let's have this one like more in darkness, just like, you know, so that way we really can't see what this squirrel is. Yeah, we just know, it's just like in shadow. But then as the story goes on, I mean, for anyone who, this is not a spoiler, it's just like, it's the first few pages. Like, it doesn't take that long before the squirrels make an appearance, but the first thing that makes an appearance is the dialogue between Ty and Burger. So, I mean, so again, David kind of went from the very beginning of like, this is a story of these two characters. So like, so we're going to like, it's going to open with a dialogue with the characters. And then we'll have a reveal of what the squirrels look like. And then we'll, you know, we'll just mention that they are existing in the world. And I thought that was, you know, I thought that was brilliant. I mean, like, I thought that was like a, that was a really good way of going about it. So that way it's, you know, again, we keep talking about like these zombie squirrels books, but again, like the story is more about Ty and Burger, you know, so, so.
Well, let's
talk about humans in this book that we could talk about.
Yeah, the humans who interact with the squirrels, and to ask another question about squirrels, I'm kidding. Let's talk about the humans, though, and the interaction there, because they're, it's not exactly this, but their plot is kind of like a Stand By Me, One Crazy Night, Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist type thing of going on an adventure, but really it's about a way of getting these characters to interact. David, what's, I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but for you as a writer, what is the appeal of this sort of time-driven story?
Yeah, I mean, when I look back at the books that I have written, more than half of them have a very short timeline, and I don't really know what that says about me as a storyteller or as a writer. There is some built-in urgency there. You don't have to keep track of, like, you know, big scopes of a calendar or anything, but I really, I mean, looking back on this story in particular, it was, the attraction was, I wanted to write a squad book. I wanted there to be these four friends where the history was just baked into the way they talked, so that when you read it, you felt like you were a member of their little group. I wanted them to just totally like geek out all the time about the things that they love. There is a lot of pop culture, and I didn't shy away from that at all. And then I really wanted to discuss, there's a lot of Jack White in this book. Actually, Jack White is drawn on the page. he is in this book. And it is a very, you can get on YouTube and see this exact interview that he gave that we reference in the book. And it's about limitations breeding creativity. When I think he set up like six mics, and then there were two mics that broke, and he's like, well, we got four, let's go. Like, he could have easily said, no, wait, we got to go get two more and add it. And his whole thing, though, is let's make the thing with what we have. And that's really what this book is about. It's these two aspiring filmmakers. And one of them is dead set on getting all the right gear, on doing things the way that he feels like it needs to be done. And the other one's like, no, let's just go. Like, we've got our phones. Let's make a movie. And I really wanted to play with the idea of limitation breeding creativity. And I think that's, you know, a thinly veiled encouragement to myself as well. You know,
I was going to say,
you're right.
That's right back at all of us.
Yeah. I mean, it's some of the best, I mean, you think about some of your favorite records or books and you know, it's made in a certain time and a place, and there's some sort of magic that's baked into it. And it has nothing to do with the technology that the creator used when they made it. Some of the greatest records were recorded on four tracks or eight tracks. And it's like, you don't need endless tracks to make a magical record. And so I really wanted to kind of instill that into these characters on the page, them learning that kind of, and reminding myself as a creator as well.
I mean, this isn't exactly limitations, but maybe the opposite. I'll ask about this. The page or double page spread that I was really blown away by, Joe, was the two page spread of the 90s room, where you have these friends, they're playing Clue, if I remember correctly, and then the entire room is just packed with posters and videos and DVDs. What was it like? Oh, is that the whole plan?
It's real.
Talk about making that, because that seems like such a challenge.
I mean that when I say this, like, drawing that room was the easiest thing in the world.
Really?
Easiest thing in the world. Here's why. First of all, I think that he already put this on his Instagram, but like, David's description of the room was, you know, what it is. It's very specific, it is very descriptive. But like, I just really had to read the sentence. Oh, it's a basement where the 90s exploded or something. Like, I can't remember specifically, but like David just described it in a way that I was like, I know that room. I've been in that room. I have that room. Like, it's like when I was growing up, like I had a living room, like I had a specific room in my house that kind of was like that, of just like posters everywhere. It's like a hangout room. You know, it's like, it's your favorite bar's bathroom where it's just like, everything is just a collage, just like a punk show. So yeah, so I mean, like, as soon as David said it, just like, oh yeah, it's a basement where it looks like there's like posters of everything, I was like, I know exactly what that looks like. I've drawn it before. So yeah, it's, I know exactly what to draw and I'm just going to have fun. So like the most, now I said, it's the easiest thing to draw. It's also the most difficult thing to keep consistent. That's the deceiving part, is that like, you know, in every panel I tried to like be consistent. And then when I wasn't, the people at Viking were very, you know, were very much on point. I'd be like, please.
Yeah, that Dookie poster is not supposed to be there. I'm so sorry.
Like, it's, I mean, like, you joke, but I mean, like, and you know, that's, I do think that that speaks to like, you know, the value of having a great production team. By the way, shout out to the entire production team of Viking Press that kind of was like both with us throughout the entire production, and just, you know, and yes, giving us notes like that of like, you know, David will tell you like the notes that he got would be like, hey, there's supposed to be an ellipsis here. And the notes that I got was like, hey, that poster looks like it's out of place here. Can you make sure that like that it's all, you know, that it's consistent? But yeah, no, I mean, like,
Both easy fixes, right? Same amount of effort to fix those two things.
Three dots and then, you know, like redrawing an entire, you know, but no, yeah, I mean, like it's a lot of fun. I love drawing scenes like that. And yes, I mean, I know that I'm thinking it's like, this is kind of like, this is where,
yeah, Joe,
work.
Talk to us about that nerd wall you have behind you there. What's going on?
Which what is that about? Like, well, you mean this entire thing over here?
Yeah,
just list it real quick. List everything on that wall.
I can't see what's really going on.
Kiko Johnson's illustration of Radiohead right here. Bones Leopard's thing right there. A thank you note that I got from a friend. A Meredith McLaren right here. A Del Borovic over here. Images of the Beatles. The gorillas are down there. Sketches that I've done. I can keep going. Like, this is like a...
let me ask you, how does that, does that ever change? Are you, is that like a power rankings wall?
No, it's ever changing for sure. I mean, like, I mean, it's something that I keep adding on to, but just like, it's, I feel like we're kind of, you know, going on a tangent. I'm sorry, David. But like,
you're great.
This thing is like, it's basically like, it's visual noise, right?
Is it a visual timeline of your life behind you?
No, there's no order to this. This is all chaos. This is just, again,
it's like, glorious chaos.
Yeah. It's, you know, like David will tell you, I mean, like it's very much of just like, you know, we all need some kind of stimulus to keep us, you know, creative and to keep us, you know, engaged. And this is mine. It's just like, I just love having this wall of like visual noise that is just like, you know, no matter where I look, I just, you know, like, we're like, oh yeah, there's that sticker from 10 years ago. Or there's like, there's that illustration. Like, there's that sketch that I did when I was in college, and then suddenly, like,
I'm sorry, production steal from Reservoir Dogs, you're going back into the drawer. I don't
or it just gets taped over, or like something kind of covers it around. Yeah, for sure. So like, so yeah, anyways, so yeah, if living next to this for as long as my professional career has existed, if not longer, yeah, like that 90s room was very much just like, as soon as David described it, it's like, I know exactly what, you know, what's going. You know, I tried to follow some of his suggestions because, you know, like, and he was, correct me if I'm wrong, David, but, you know, like, David did give some, you know, did write down some suggestions in the...
I think I had, like, maybe six specific things that I had thought of. It was the old Mac. It was, like, maybe, like, three specific posters. Yeah. And then I just knew that you were going to fill in the res. And that was, you know, that was, like, one of the great things about this relationship, Joe said at the very beginning, was that as soon as we talked, we just kind of hit it off, and it was like trust just kind of almost immediately between the two of us. And it was really inspiring for me, because, you know, as a writer of until now prose novels, like, that's a very isolating kind of process. I just do that by myself, and of course I have an editor who helps me tremendously, but I'll go for months without talking to anyone but my wife and kid. And so, but I was in bands for like 10 years, and I was very much kind of craving that creative collaboration, kind of like what the book is about, right? Like making stuff with your friends. And so, yeah, Jose and I just kind of right away was like, well, this is the perfect thing, not just because it's fulfilling this thing that I wanted in my own life, but also because it's what the book's about. So we get to kind of live out a very similar journey to what the kids did in the book.
Yeah. Speaking of the kids' journey, there's a little bit of a tease towards the end of the book, and I'm not going to get into spoilers necessarily because it's only been out for a week, that there could be more to explore in this world. Is that something you're thinking about? Is that something on the horizon? Could there be a Luminous Beings 2?
I would love to. I don't have specific plans for it yet. I have to give total credit to that to Joe. One of the early conversations that we had was, you know, yes, I had written it as a screenplay and then I adapted it into a script, but the spirit of collaboration, you know, we presented this as a project together to the publisher. We didn't work through the publisher creatively to with each other. This was very much like a team effort. And I had said early on to Joe, like, hey, I want us to make this thing together. So if you have story ideas or character ideas or like everything is, I'm not precious about anything. Everything is up for grabs. I want this to be not just you're executing my vision, but this is also your vision. And it very much was that. But one of those things was, I think it was in, there's a scene actually based on a castle. I live in Lexington, Kentucky, and right outside of Lexington, there is a castle that was privately owned for a while. It is now a restaurant and a museum and all that, but it used to be privately owned. And so this castle, there's a castle in this book that's sort of loosely based on that castle. And I just imagined what it would be like for this kind of drug-addled late 20s guy who hit the lottery. He buys a castle and he lives in it. And so we're thinking of ways to kind of fill, there's a scene where this kid is running through this castle from room to room, and we're trying to think of ways to fill the rooms. And Jose was like, what if we put a couple other glowy-eyed animals in there? And I was like, well, we've already established this is just a squirrel. It's a squirrel-specific virus. This doesn't affect. And Jose was like, but does it have to be? And I was like, okay, that could be cool. Sorry. So yeah, Joe, I mean, you can
save
talk
it
more
for
about
the
this.
Next one.
Yeah, this was very much kind of Joe's.
Open the door.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's, I mean, yes to everything that David said, and just kind of piggybacking on that, it's like, a couple of things with that is, one, the character that lives in that castle and just, like, everything in that castle, like, it really, like, everything in that castle really does open the door for, like, infinite possibilities just because of who this character is and everything that is going on in that castle, for sure. The thing that I told David specifically, though, was that, and again, I know that he just kind of said it over here, where it's just like, this is not an allegory for COVID. But you know, like COVID was a whole thing. I mean, we lost a lot of people, unfortunately, and whatnot.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But if y'all remember during the early days of COVID, I guess, just to, you know, I know to simplify it a little bit, there was this moment during COVID where, like, we didn't know anything about it. A lot of us were just like terrified in what this could be. And if I remember correctly, like there were even like some news headlines where we were kind of reading that like someone's cat got COVID and someone's dog got COVID. And just like
there was like a lion or a tiger.
Yeah,
or
just like we just didn't really know. So like when David wrote this, you know, so when David was giving me the script and I was working through that, I mean, I just pitched him the idea of like, you know, I know that this virus in this story is squirrel specific, but as far as we know, I mean, like, we only know what the characters know. I mean, we only know, you know, so therefore we only know what that world knows at the moment. So like, yeah, like what if, you know, what if there are like these other instances that they can be anomalies, that it can be a trend? We don't know. Like, we don't know if it's a scientific experiment. We don't know if that's just the way the nature of this infection is going. But let's play with it. So like, so yeah, so why don't we have like, you know, a crow that also has like a thing, like, is it similar to the zombie squirrel thing? Or is it just like a variant? Or is it less lethal or even more lethal? Is it less contagious? I don't know. Like, let's just play with it. And also, like, I also kind of left it that way of just like, I also thought it was best to leave it as is, because as far as we know right now, like, or, you know, I mean, unless David has a surprise for me. As far as we know right now, or as of the time of this stream, there are no plans for a sequel. There is no, you know, Luminous Beings, you know, next chapter right now, for a number of reasons. And, you know, David and I talked about those quite a bit, but like, you know, that doesn't mean that the door is shut necessarily on that entirely. And also, you know, yeah, like David said, anything is up for grabs. So as far as we know, someone who could come in and say like, well, I want to do a sequel. Would you allow me to? I'm like, well, let's have a conversation. Maybe it's a great idea. Maybe it's not. So yeah, we just kind of, you know, we kind of hinted at a lot of like something that I think is very important when it comes to world building that I think David did great. And CAP Ward also, you know, colored beautifully, where it's just like the world is so big, it's so vast, we don't understand all of it, and what, you know, and as long as we can get to know it, maybe that's a way to go. So, you know, like there are a lot of open-ended things in the world, just very much similar to what we go through. So
reality. Yeah.
We do have a question here from YouTube. This is from Schreikler, says, how does the world of this book relate to those of David's prose novels?
Oh,
I've never been asked that before. I would say not at all. that's my knee jerk, but I don't think that's true. Actually, now that I think about it, I mean, I do tend. I mean, so my prose novels are Y, like upper YA, and so they do star like teens, basically, like there's some coming of age and. I do gravitate toward found family, like friends who act like family. And I don't know why necessarily. I think it's because I do, like, I really love writing dialogue. And so found family kind of is a built-in opportunity to have friends who have known each other for years. Like that kind of, like the beginning of this book, they talk about the Coen brothers. One of the reasons the Coen brothers movies are so great is because they're brothers. You can see their history on the screen. And yeah. There's something about found family that has an inkling of that as well, where you can kind of just sense that these people have known each other for a really long time without ever saying it, but you just kind of feel it and show it in the way that they behave together. And so I do think that's probably something that I do in most of my books. And then I have a book called The Electric Kingdom that's pretty dark, straight up post-apocalyptic with like a little bit of a sci-fi edge to it. So this, I guess you could say, is the like
zombie chipmunks. Is that one?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, the gophers, the
capybaras, zombie capybaras.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Just like the chillest zombies ever.
Yeah, very lovely zombies.
Well, listen, the book is fantastic. Before we let you go, though, obviously this just came out, so everybody should check this out. But is there anything else you want to plug, Joe? Anything you want to plug that people should check out from you?
Do I go first or does David go first?
Yeah, go first, Joe.
All right. So I would love to plug in a bit. First of all, everyone go check out CAP Ward's work, please. Like, they did an amazing job coloring this book, but they also make amazing comics on their own. Check them out, please. Anything by that. As for myself, I've made other comics. This was not my first comic, David.
Twin Cities, Suncatcher. Jose's got some awesome.
If anyone wants to like look at my other works, please feel free to check them out. I think they're very cool. I work very hard and I try to make them as cool as possible. But in terms of plugging, I do have another middle grade book coming out in February called Halfway to Somewhere, by Random House Graphic that I'm also very proud of, and I'm looking forward to it. I just got the arcs in the mail the other day. So yeah, that's what I'll plug in.
Excellent. Yeah. Nice. David, Jose, what about you?
Jose won't say this, but Twin Cities, which was that your last middle grade?
That's Kirk, the most recent one, yeah.
Yeah, Kirk has called it transcendently good, which is like very, very high. Yeah, that is like really uncomfortable.
Right, I don't know what that means.
It's good. It's really, really good.
So my last, before Luminous Beings, my last novel was a book called I Loved You in Another Life, which is sort of great like title. It's a love story about two people who find each other and then they realize that they've been in love many, many times, but it's told across the globe and throughout history. We see points of views of these same two souls kind of living over and over again.
Cool.
So yeah, I guess that would be
sweet.
Awesome. Well, both of you, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. Congratulations on the book. It is great. And fingers crossed, I would love to read Luminous Beings 2, Revenge of the Raccoons. But I guess
we'll see.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much.
All right, thank you.
I know how much you love raccoons. Coming through.
I hate raccoons.
All right, thanks, y'all.
Thank you for having us. So this was a lot of fun. So thank you so thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Is Alina going to be here in a little bit?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she's there.
Almost immediately.
Oh, great. I'm going to listen to what Alina has to say because they are fantastic as well. So
excellent. Love to hear that. Guest solidarity. Awesome. Thank you both so much. Have a great night. All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Luminous Beings. It is out right now from Viking Books for young readers. It is great, in case you couldn't tell.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And why don't we bring in our cleverly teased next guest? Yeah. They are the mastermind behind DigiNerds, which is also out right now from Iron Circus Comics. Ladies and gentlemen, Alina Pete. Alina, welcome. Hello.
Hey,
welcome.
Hello, everybody. How's it going?
So good. Listen, great. Not to put you on the spot right off, but we got a little sneak peek of something before the show, which is your bird. Is your bird still here with us?
Or he did is. Bird? Let me see if I can get his attention.
Okay.
Did Nico, you want a treat? Come here, buddy.
Oh, wow. Oh, this is, that trained. Works on me also.
Yeah, I may be training birds in the middle of this interview, so we'll see.
Most of our guests are, obviously. Like, we mostly have people trading birds. Let's talk about from birds to indigenous.
Hey. Amazing segue.
Thank you very much. This book is also great. This is a great anthology of nerdy-focused stories and stories about nerds from an indigenous perspective. I love the path that this book took as well. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a little bit of an open call that you end up on Backer Kit, and now it's being put out through Iron Circus Comics. So that's an awesome success story right there.
Yeah.
Where did the germ of the idea start from, though?
Well, the way I got involved with Iron Circus Comics is Kel McDonald, who had put out the Cautionary Fables and Fairy Tales series, had done, you know, started with Europe, did Africa, Asia, Oceania. And then by the time they got to North America, they called me and they were like, I need someone native on this because I'm very white and I want somebody to handle the cultural protocols. I know there's a bunch of stuff involved about that, but I don't know the first thing about what it is. And I was like, well, I am a comics person. And more than that, I was actually trained as a storyteller growing up by my mother. So I know the protocols that are involved with translating legends into written or drawn form. So I was like, yeah, let me handle the protocols on that. I'll sign on as a co-editor. So we'd worked together on that, and that took off. The Cautionary Fables North America crowdfund went amazingly. I think it was one of their biggest comic crowdfunding campaigns ever. So as that was kind of wrapping up and we were getting stuff out, some of the comments were coming back from people who were like, I really want to see more of this. I really love this. I was sitting there thinking, okay, well, you know, a lot of time when Native people are represented in books, we're all focused in the past. So it's either legends or it's, you know, about the colonial periods or pre-colonial periods, but it's never about us right now. And there's just such a wealth of stories there to tell. Like, I go to powwows, I see people with CDs as part of their regalia that have had beaded sections around them.
Yeah, that's awesome.
There's a guy who's got, like, a Decepticon-themed powwow regalia. So he's, like, the Decepticon dancer. There's a famous powwow song that's got the SpongeBob theme in it. So, like, we're nerds. We are very nerdy people. We are here engaging with pop culture, and that's something that never gets really represented in media. So I was like, well, this is a great chance to show that. Let's do a modern stories anthology.
That's awesome.
Just
about what Alina said, that you mentioned the protocols of translating those stories. Could you tell us what that, sort of define that?
I'm curious. So for Woman in the Woods, the Cautionary Fables book, I know that stories are a living thing. So they're carried by people who tell them regularly and keep them alive. But that also means that they don't belong to anyone. We're carriers of the knowledge. We don't own it. It belongs to everybody in our group. So if you are going to be translating stories from legend, from culture, from like oral protocol, you sort of need to ask your elders and go, hey, this is what I want to do with this, and this is how I'm going to tell it. Can you check me on this and make sure I'm not, you know, veering off telling the stories wrong or, you know, misrepresenting who we are and what the story is supposed to be about? So one of the things I did as editor on that was to make sure that all of our writers had gone to their communities and had a chat with them about, like, hey, am I doing this right? Am I allowed to do this? Do you have any things that we should avoid? So one of the stories in there was actually about a Navajo mythical, well, supernatural being that you're not supposed to mention its name or depict it.
Ooh.
And so the pitch was that they were going to depict it changing forms. And they heard from their elders that that's actually not something you're supposed to do. So we had a discussion about that. And they were like, okay, my elder said we can show it in one shape, but we can't show it changing. And it probably shouldn't be a human shape. So they made the choice on their end as a writer to just depict it as a horse. And so knowing that it was a supernatural being came all from context and from the human character's reaction to this horse appearing on the road before them at midnight. And it was actually way scarier that way, I think, than if we showed a monster.
I love that so much, like protecting story through like generationally. And then, like, we were talking with the other folks about sort of limitations, and not to call these protocols limitations, but just guidance. I think it pushes you out, like you're saying, to make choices that both serve the story, but also find that new way to represent in a way that, like you said, is scarier. I love that so much.
I just wanted to geek out about this collection of amazing stories here. I mean, I love the colors. I love the pacing. I mean, I think it was like the first or second story where it's this kind of like misconnections love story thing. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Cameron Wright, his work is so gorgeous. And so, like, I know a lot of Native regalia is really, really colorful. And there's a lot of colors have meanings to people. So I was not surprised when the book came out as colorful as it did.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the reasons I got Britt Newbo or Holoski on Instagram to do the cover. So we have this like glorious, glorious, like pink Sailor Moon inspired cover for the book. Absolutely beautiful. And I think that really sells the like vibrancy you're going to see inside the book.
Yeah. Even the title pages with the kind of like, it's just so.
Yeah.
You put a lot of time.
That was Chai Mardukian, one of Iron Circus's graphic designers, who like knocked it out of the park on the graphic design work in there. We were chatting about it, and it's like, so what should we do for colors and for shapes? And I was like, well, I want to do like some of our traditional weavings, so like having some of the patterns in there, but some of our traditional weavings also sort of belong or are held by certain family groups or certain tribal groups. So I want to stick away from any specific patterns. I think chevrons generally are safe, so let's go all chevrons. And then Hai took that and just ran with it.
Well, talk about the content of the book a little bit, because it's an interesting gamut of like what we're looking at here is a sci-fi story. And then you have some stories that are more about the experience of being a nerd versus nerdy itself. So what was important to get in there, and what was important in terms of the breadth of the balance of the anthology?
Well, we have a mix of fiction and nonfiction stories. And I wanted to leave that really open for people, because I know a lot of the time these stories are coming right from people's hearts and they're very personal. So you don't necessarily want to, you know, share that with the world, but you do want to share aspects of the story. So I was like, I don't want to just limit it to nonfiction. Obviously, there's going to be an emphasis on nonfiction stories, because we want to tell stories about real people living, real Indigenous people living now and interacting with technology. So the pages that you have here are by my friend Raven John, who is a 3D artist, as well as a multidisciplinary artist. They do so much. And this is some of their experiences with VR, but told through a character. So this is one of those stories that was like, okay, well, I do want to, it's a personal story, but it's at one remove. It's about a fictional person, but it's stuff I've thought and felt and sort of lived in my daily life. So we have some of those. We have a couple stories that are based on real events. So Dorvin 5, one that you were showing off earlier with the Star Trek, that's actually my story about growing up as a young kid and seeing Native people on TV not really represented very well. It's called Dorvin 5 because there's that one infamous Star Trek The Next Generation episode where Picard and the Enterprise have to go to a planet that was settled by Native people and kick them out.
No.
So, yeah, that's not a great episode.
Not ideal.
Well, this is a little bit off, and I'm sure you get this kind of question all the time, but do you feel like representation in genre shows is getting better at all. I mean, we had things like, there was Echo on recently. I don't know how you felt about that. And there's been other shows that I'm blanking on the other show.
Res Dogs.
Yeah, there we go. That's the other one.
Rutherford Falls?
Rutherford Falls, yes, for sure.
Yeah.
So I turn it over to you rather than listing shows. Do you feel like that representation is getting better?
I think it's getting a lot better. And that, so here's the thing. There's been representation of Native people in media in Canada because of the CBC for decades. So one of the shows I used to watch when I was a kid was called North of 60. And it was a Canadian-produced show. It was about a northern community that was primarily Native. There was a couple major Native actors on there, one of whom showed up in that Dorvin 5 episode. So I actually referenced Tom Jackson in my story because I knew him from North of 60. And I was so happy to see him on something that wasn't just CBC-produced. So but even in Canada, Native representation has been sort of niche. It's sort of like, well, this is for Native people, but nobody else is supposed to watch it. We'll include it. And I think shows like Rutherford Falls, Reservation Dogs, and Echo especially is like really kicking the doors open to a non-Native audience to really engage with our stories. And I think that's nothing but good. Like, that's part of what I want to do with Indigenerds is be like, hey, this isn't for us. This is for all of you to read stories about us. We're still here. We're vibrant, silly, crazy, wonderful, nerdy people. Read about how passionate we are about things.
Yeah. I don't want to distract from this too much, but your bird has showed up on camera.
Yeah.
Left. He's gone. Just left. Okay. Yeah. Never mind.
You called it out, Alex. Called the bird.
I know. I
don't know if
you
can see my shirt, but I've got comic book panels of birds.
Nice. Nice. Bring it all together.
It's amazing. Bird.
Yep.
Well, what do you think? I mean, I think you've touched on this a little bit already, but what do you think you learned specifically by putting together Indigenerds? Like, you're obviously very nerdy. You're very well-versed in this space, but was there anything that you feel like opened your eyes in particular?
I think a couple different things. So the first would be that there was all of these, there's through notes in the anthology. So I didn't specifically ask for any particular theme other than modern Indigenous life, maybe engaging with pop culture somehow, but it doesn't even need to be pop culture. And we got these interesting through notes. We got all of these, you know, several stories deal with being represented in different media, whether it's World of Warcraft and their like Native inspired Torin, or poor representation. So D&D had some sort of Native races that you could play, and it was very not great representation. How important it is to see ourselves told in these stories. So these were things that were echoed in two or three different stories, how engaging with pop culture and nerdiness kept several people sort of from succumbing to despair at certain points. So James Willier told a story in there about how D&D brought him out of depression and gave him a drive to keep creating again and got him through a really tough period as a teen. And then Milo Applejohn tells a similar story about how when his family's house burnt down, it was getting back into World of Warcraft and thinking about his Torin guild mates that kept him through that really difficult time. So I just thought that there was, even though we're from all different tribes across all of North America and we all have rapidly hugely different experiences, there's all these like similarities of the Native experience and how we really, you know, need those nerdy parts of ourselves to stay healthy. Yeah.
Well, now that it's been out for a little bit, are you keeping the Indigenerd good word going? Are you going to have some panels and events, anything
Absolutely.
Like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got a postponed book launch party going on at the Museum of Vancouver, probably in October, sort of around Thanksgiving, at least here in Canada. Yeah. So that's thematic. I'll be doing several other talks about it, but I've also been invited to speak at a comics and identity class at the University of British Columbia here in Vancouver.
Cool.
So definitely going to be continuing to talk about it probably for years to come, I think, as people discover it and engage with the stories and want to dig deeper and know more about it.
Awesome. Are you already pulling in more? Or are you ready to reach back out for the next round of anthologies?
I got some ideas percolating. I think there's so many more stories that we could be telling.
Yeah, I appreciate you trying to summon the bird at the same
time.
He's
really sleepy
now. Oh, no, it's okay.
I love the bird, though, keeps lurking at every corner. I really understands paneling. It's really great.
Yeah, work in the room.
That bird does not want to be on camera. But What else would you like to plug? Obviously, people should check this out, but anything else folks should check out from you, Alina?
Yeah, check out Woman in the Woods. It's another comic through Iron Circus. And then I've actually got two books out coming out really soon here. One is a middle grades graphic novel through Orca Press, and it's nice. Called Lost at Windy River. It is a real life story told by the granddaughter of the girl that the story is about a time that she, a young Native girl, got lost in the winter wilds of Northern Canada and used her traditional knowledge to survive. So that's really cool. Awesome. Really, you know, for young audiences, despite the survival story. So I think it's going to be really, really good to see out in books, stores. And then I have a story in a Shadowrun anthology that's out for pre-order now called Myth, Machines, and Magic. So they let me play around with their setting of what if land back was real and there was a country called the Native American Nations that was run and administrated by Native folks. So I did a Native UN meeting with intrigue. So check that out.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Alina, love it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Congratulations.
Really great.
Thanks so much for chatting with me. It was great.
All right. Have fun with your bird.
Thank you.
Congrats.
All right. There we go. Once again, the book is called Indigenerds. It is out right now from Iron Circus Comics. And like we said, great anthology. Very fun. I hope for more. Oh, my God.
So well put together.
And folks, we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comment section on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch, maybe Instagram as well. In the meantime, what you drinking, fellas? What you drinking? Pete, I'm really curious to hear from you because you ran out of Land Shark.
That's right.
What you got?
I'm now drinking garage beer. I don't have a garage.
Doesn't seem real.
But I'm drinking garage beer.
Yeah, that sounds fake.
Yeah.
That's like the beer from the set of That 70s Show.
Wow. Delicious.
I thought for sure you were going to go in a different direction, and you went made up. Fictional. Yeah. You're drinking
even
fictional.
Worse. Even faker. I just finished a Negroni. I was having one of those. That was pretty good.
Nice, great. I just had sort of a margarita adjacent cocktail, and now I'm drinking a Brooklyn Pilsner.
The pills.
Excellent. We have something here I'm going to bring up just to check. This is from Stray Bullet. I want to take the secret lock and key quiz.
Ooh, great guess. But no. Nope.
Yes. That is not going to unlock the secret quiz that you are hiding on the show, right, Pete?
That's right. There are a couple secret quizzes.
A couple?
Yeah.
What?
I've been bored. I don't know what to tell you.
God. I mean, to be fair, and did we say that there's a clue on Pete's screen to work?
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. If you look in the... went the wrong way. If you look in the background, the clues can unlock the secret quiz.
I want to take the big confusing mess quiz.
Nope.
And I will say that's fucked up of me to say, given my background.
All right, we got a couple of questions here. This is from All in the Game. Were you all surprised by Beetlejuice's box office?
No.
Oh, okay.
Great.
Did you see it, Pete?
No, but it looked like a banger from the start. It looked like a banger from the start, and had a great team on it.
I mean, I got to say, just to be the get wonky about it, I mean, this is like the TV show Wednesday, like the most popular show on Netflix. It's like the same people doing this movie. It's this easy win. This movie could have been any sort of juice, and it would have been great.
No, how dare you?
I was surprised it did over $100 million, but... that's an enormous amount of money, but at the same time, to your point, I was also surprised how well Wednesday did. So, what do I know?
Yeah,
clearly what nothing. Do you know?
I haven't heard if it's actually good or not.
So, I haven't seen it. I watched Beetlejuice again with my son. He had never seen it before this weekend. Man. Holds up, good movie.
Yeah, good. I haven't seen it in a minute. HBO keeps being like, "Yo, we're recommending this for you. Why aren't you watching it?"
Yeah, you should watch it. It's
why don't you
funny.
Listen to HBO, Pete? HBO's trying to help stuff. You.
Also, not much of a movie. Like the...
What? How dare you, sir?
Well, no, here's the thing about a lot of 80s movies. Is they're like, we're going crazy. And that's pretty much it. And you watch it and you're like, this barely holds together as a plot, but I'm having a very good time. And some of them don't really hold up. Some of them fall apart because of that. Beetlejuice is not one of those because just everybody's so good at it. And Michael Keaton just... jams on through the whole thing that it becomes very engaging.
If I haven't seen it in many years, if I had to guess the plot or try to recite it, isn't it like Beetlejuice helps these people get rid of their neighbors they hate so the ghosts don't die twice?
It's not neighbors. They moved into their house where they died. Yeah.
It's just there's so many elements watching the movie now where you're like, why are they? I tried to imagine a modern movie being like, yeah, and when the ghosts leave the house, they go to Saturn, where there's sandworms, and the sandworms are claymation. Mm-hmm. And that's not really important or explained in any way.
Well, that was back when Tim Burton could just be like, yeah, it's this. And everyone's like, sick, cool, no notes.
And I love that. Like,
I agree. That's that was a good thing.
Yes. But it's just, again, watching it from a modern perspective is like, I don't know how.
He has scissors for hands. Green light.
Green light, exactly.
Schreckler says, what's an animal you haven't seen in comics but really want to?
Wow, that's a tough question. I feel like animals are well covered.
I love a flying squirrel. You know what I mean? There's Squirrel Girl, which is great, but...
Flying squirrel is the most superhero animal, Pete. That's the most represented animal in comics.
Chip, the Green Lantern squirrel, isn't he a flying squirrel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 100%. You've seen that.
Well, I don't know.
What about a giant African tree slug? I've never seen that in comics. That would be interesting.
It's great. This is a real, like, how many animals can you name situation.
Yeah.
we're sneaking into.
Stray Bullet mentions also this week's cocktail is a classic Southern hurricane because we're about to be in a hurricane down here. It looked delicious. I did not have all the rums on hand.
Yeah, hope you survive all right there,
yes,
Stray Bullet.
Good
and
luck.
Your house
I'm
is okay
you.
And your family and all right.
Yeah. Yep. Shouts to Nola.
Francine, right? There we go. Frederico Rosa says, has the hype for the Penguin and Agatha next week? Classic
I gotta
duo.
Say, the Agatha hype is sort of doing pretty well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our internal hype? I just mean culture hype. It feels like maybe Agatha's going to be good and people are excited to watch it, which is great.
I think both of
exciting.
Them. Like,
yeah.
They
I
are,
both.
Warner Brothers... to a crazy amount that I was not expecting, but I guess I should have been because they haven't had Batman stuff in a while, but they are all in on the Penguin. Like if you live in New York, you cannot walk anywhere without running into a Penguin pop-up something where they're like, we've taken over Gotham City and turned it into the Penguin's Gotham. Hey, you love mobsters, right? He kills people. Hey, like they're doing a restaurant themed around the Penguin at the San Gennaro Festival, which is crazy.
Very interesting. I don't know who that's for.
I'm
it's like,
not
hey,
sure.
Penguin's taking over the Uniqlo on 34th Street. It's like, okay. Don't know.
Right, sounds good.
Don't know what we're doing here, but sure.
Reason
but at the same
clothes.
Time, I think by all rights, t-shirts. The Batman is great. I think Penguin is probably going to be great. So I'm excited for that. Agatha also looks really good. Yeah. So
I agree
I'm
about the Penguin. Before we move to Agatha, like I just think that looks like it's good, solidly made, right in line with the Batman that we've been with for a while. So all good, makes sense. It's the Marvel of it all. I feel like Marvel so much lately has been like, here's a TV series. You're going to love it. And then the 2 weeks before, they're like, sorry, it's bad. We're going to give it to you all at once, and it's only 3 episodes now. I'm sorry. And this one is not doing that. It's exciting.
Well, you got the Han at the helm, and, you know, she's a comedic genius, so I think they just kind of really...
You've got the Han, you've got Patti LuPone, you've got Aubrey Plaza.
Just because Pete says it, Alex, you don't have to start calling her the Han, because that gets confusing. Han
I don't
Solo,
want nuns until you got Catherine Han, is what I always
say.
Wow. Yeah.
Anyway, you got her, you got the whole team from WandaVision.
I mean, you got the Plaza, you got the Han. I mean, come on, man.
The big thing for me is you've got Jack Schaefer, who was one of the big minds behind WandaVision, and that was the best one. So if any show is going to lead into being a TV show, it is going to be Agatha all along, and I'm excited for that. We'll see.
Can't wait.
Stanley says, any shows you might do a podcast about Ted Lasso? I think the ones we should probably do are The Penguin and Agatha All Along.
Yeah, we haven't done a lot of our Marvel and DC.
I would love to do a Ted Lasso
hot.
Rewatch with you guys. Make you watch them all like a bunch of
Absolutely
times?
Absolutely not. Under no circumstances.
Oh, come on.
I do have an idea for a podcast where I was like, oh, we don't have any more times for podcasts. I'll pitch you guys off air, though. Remind me about that.
Why bring it up then?
I think it's a good idea. I don't want to sell. I don't want to give it away free here on the show.
We're doing our next superhero team draft tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We'll have that for you
here, soon. Okay, I'll pitch it to you guys because I don't think I'm ever going to do it. So with Beetlejuice coming out, I had an idea for a podcast. My idea for the podcast is The Exorcist 167 times. And so if you remember, the first Beetlejuice movie, he very famously says, I've watched The Exorcist 167 times.
It keeps getting better every time I see it.
He keeps getting funnier every single time I see it. So the idea is to, on the podcast, once a week, you watch The Exorcist and you see if it gets funnier 167 times.
Alex, just real quick. I mean, I think that's a fun idea. I'm on board, obviously. But you pitching us podcasts is like pitching a glass of water to drowning men. You're like, hey, can I pour this water in your mouth? Or are you just going to keep drowning in what you have in your mouth?
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll do that.
I'm in.
So sounds good. But yes, we should talk about The Penguin on Sons of God. We should talk about Agatha All Along.
I'm out on that that podcast idea, by the way.
Which podcast idea? Exorcist 167
Exorcist,
times?
Yeah.
I mean, I will say that would be, we would go crazy. That, you could watch us lose our minds.
Well,
you
my secondary thought, that's my not secondary a thought, which it. I was trying to wrap my brain around, I was like, I think this is making too complicated, but I think it's funny if you get only guests on the show who are from Beetlejuice. So you ask them, so you make them watch The Exorcist. And then you're like,
I like how you're like, we're having guests and then we're going to make them do stuff.
We're
going to
make them watch The Exorcist and be like, how many times have you
how
watched
are we
it? Is it
make
funnier
them?
This time? What do you think? I don't know. Anyway, stuff. We'll see what happens with that. What are some prose books you've been reading? Nothing.
Prose fiction? I've been reading I've been reading Sidney Lumet's Making Movies off and on, which is very good. And also this book, which is a collection of essays by directors on there. It's called My First Movie. And there's a great one. And it was written like 20 years ago. So there's a great Kevin Smith talking about Clerks. Man, it's wild how he made that movie. He was working at that convenience store, making it all night. They would never sleep. They were like... ruined all the time making that movie. Talk about working with limitations. Great stuff.
Excellent. And I've been reading The Witches to my son. I don't know if that counts, but
oh, nice.
Great
nice.
Book. There we go. I think that's it for your audience questions. We are going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free dollars to Midtown Comics Online, because if you had $25, you'd probably go to a comic book shop. You know what I mean? I mean, come on. All we need is a first hand up of me. I'd like to do it. I could use $25 free dollars. Any of those things, and then you will instantly win.
By the way, I'm really
win.
Excited to hear you pay tribute to any of the celebrities that have passed away in this week. There's been such big ones, like James Earl Jones passed away, John Cassaday, of course.
Oh,
not necessarily in movies, but I think, obviously, it would be very appropriate to talk about John Cassaday if you're going to pay a comic book. Tribute to somebody, because we do a comic book show.
Like
so I'm really curious to see.
We should change this name of this podcast to... 2 months ago, they died. Book club.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good idea. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll tell you what. Since nobody volunteers,
someone's gonna volunteer.
If nobody volunteers, I will
just
play
this. Do it, and then we can give the money to charity or something.
Well, I was gonna say we'll give the money to Brett Macris.
There we go.
To Brett and Becky, how about that? Let's do that. Nice. You're all out. We're doing it.
Nice.
Justin and I are doing trivia. Here
it's
we go.
Going to shift.
All right, here we go. This way I don't have to give hints, so this should be go really smooth. Today's trivia is about the impressive comic book series Why the Last Man, and a small nod to the absolute legend James Earl Jones.
Wow!
Mufasa and so many other amazing performances. Please listen to all three options.
And what I love about this is this really gives a ranking of who's important to you. You know, there's like whoever you talked about who died 2 months ago, everybody in between doesn't matter. James Earl Jones.
Yeah, now I feel bad for like Richard Simmons who got bumped or whoever.
Hey, don't feel bad about Richard Simmons. You know, he got to live an extraordinary life. Make a lot of people happy.
Yeah, he got to sweat to all the oldies.
Yeah, I mean, what more do you want out of life? All right, gentlemen, please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. This comic series won numerous awards, but it is also an epic blank. Is it A, love story, B, who's that dick fucking on the mountain, C, Richard Bonehill?
That was a good one, Pete. I'm going to say A. What do you think, Justin?
I got to go C.
It is A. It's an epic love story. One of the things I love about that series. So amazing. Okay, here we go. Question number two. This comic was so good, it was made into a TV show. But what was the name of one of the most badass characters? Is it A, Agent 355? B, whoa, you crushed that. What are you drinking? C, Dickie Beer.
Oh, very, very phallic.
This is a tough one. This is a harder, but I'm going to have to go A again.
I feel like Dickie Beer was one of the agents working with him.
I think so. Yeah, I remember Brian K. Vaughan talking about that a lot.
Yeah. Really pushing Dickie Beer on us.
Well, only one of you are right. Yes, it's Agent 355.
Ah, man, 0 for 2.
Heartwarming story. Absolutely heartwarming. Question number three. And Alex, you'll like this because it's not really a question, just more of an observance. Hey, ever thought about Paper Dolls, the title of Volume 7, as foreshadowing for another comic series called Blank? Is it A, Paper Girls, B, whoa, it's dank in here, what you smoking, C, Elf Joint?
Wait, you're saying there's a person named Elf Joint that you worked at?
Like the guy who eats cats.
That's right.
Okay.
I see. You're saying there's a person named Alf Joint that was in a movie with James Earl Jones that you expect people to be like, I'm a huge Alf Joint guy.
Yep. People are already guessing.
A? Is it A?
A is correct. Yeah, wow. Paper Girls.
Congratulations to me, or more specifically to Brett and Becky. We are going to donate some money to their amazing sounding restaurant, Shift. And David Cruz guesses, was the secret movie Return of the Jedi.
Yes, it's the 1983 banger, Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Interesting. All right, as we all
know. Who does James play in that? I'm trying to think. Is he?
I think he's one of the Ewoks.
Nope, Darth Vader.
Not Darth familiar with Vader. The character, unfortunately. Yeah. Anyway, as we all know, new comic books are coming out all the time. Pete, what are you looking forward to that's coming out this week?
Yeah, this is a Pete stack.
Oh, my God. There's Oh, my God. There's so many great ones. I can't. I'll just list them. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 2, Avi. DC vs. Vampires World War V2. Dead Eyes, The Empty Frames, number 1, and Ain't No Graves, number 5, just to name a few.
Really nice. Really, really nice. I'm going to shout out Department of Truth, number 25, the James Tynan, Martin Simon's book that is...
JT4, that's your boy.
Yeah, fantastic book, and really building toward something. This is a issue coming out, I think, is the end of this major JFK assassination arc. It feels like sort of the definitional arc for the series. So really enjoying that. And the comic I've been looking forward to the most since I read the first issue is Uncanny X-Men number 2. That is the best superhero storytelling out there. And I guess one more I'll shout out, Green Lantern number 15. Jeremy Adams has been sort of secretly like running one of the best runs on Green Lanterns in so long. It's really good. Yeah, I don't know why it's such a secret, because this new brash Hal Jordan that that Jeremy and Fernando Pastorin have brought back is so good and feels fresher than a lot of Hal Jordan we've seen in many years.
I will emphasize all those. A couple of other things I'll throw out. I'm sorry if we already talked about this. Oh, Straight Bullets asks, is that a new Funko Pop behind you? I don't know which one he means. Maybe the Chucky? I've had that for a while.
Is there new ones back there, though? That's the question.
There's some new ones over there, but they're off camera. I also don't buy Funko Pops. People just send them to me.
All right, Nutflex, take it easy.
There you go. I don't
know. Wow, you are Funko Pop. Funko Papa.
I'm Funko Papa.
Funko Papa.
Funko Papa. Star Wars number 50 from Charles Soule and Matabek Musa Bekov. This is the final issue of that series. Charles seems pretty hyped for it when I talked to him at Terrificon, so I'm excited to check that out. That has 50 pages of story, which is pretty cool. And the other one that I don't think we mentioned, Fantastic Four, number 25.
Nah.
I love this run from Ryan North. Oh, it's so good. It's everything feels like a classic, iconic Fantastic Four story. It's fun. It's science-based. Do not miss it. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Alita Pete for coming on to talk about DigiNerds. Yeah. That is out now from Iron Circus Comics.
We're
also, David Arnold and Joe Pimiento. What is my problem?
Wow, my
for Luminous Beings. Really that is great. Out now from Viking Books and Young Readers.
So great.
For Young Readers. Next week, crazy pack show for you all. Fred Van Lente and AJ Ampadu are going to be here to talk about Resurgence of the Valiant Universe.
Yeah.
Derek Robertson is going to be here to talk about Greaser, Gemini Blues. And Erica Schultz is going to be here to talk about Daredevil, Woman Without Fear, and everything else that she's working on.
So, Hallows Eve? Can we talk Hallows Eve?
We can talk Hallows Eve, baby.
Yeah.
So much stuff to talk about. Comic Book Club News. Our daily news podcast, check that out every day of the week in its own dedicated feed. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Take care of yourself out there.